Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of our lives. And we are here with Sarah Vaughn and another Road to the Trials episode. Sarah, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So we are about a week and a half away from the Chicago Marathon, a race that you did last year, a race where you PR'd in the marathon, 2:26. You finished in seventh place last year in a very good field, which is Chicago Marathon's a world marathon major, right? It's always going to have an elite field, but maybe never more elite than this year. I can't wait for this year. My goodness.
Yeah. No, it's really exciting. It's one of those fields where I looked at it once, made sure I was on the list, and I'm like, I'm not looking at this again. I'm just going to assume everybody's running it, and it's going to be super competitive all the way down. So,
Before they announced the elite field, obviously, like, you're in the process as an elite runner, and I love for you just to go through, like, the nuts and bolts of this, but, you know, figuring out which race you're going to do you have an idea, like, from the race organizers, like, how strong the field is going to be ahead of time, or what's the process like in terms of your decision-making process with them, and also knowing who may or may not be running in it when they announced, I think, back in, like, the beginning of summer?
Yeah, so I love to hand all of that off to my agent. I have decision fatigue in general with life. So I'm like, coaches and an agent, what fall marathon should I run? And actually, I think my coaches preferred Berlin just because it's a couple weeks earlier, a couple more weeks before the trials. But I think also I'm not in a position to turn away money. So I think the offer was better at Chicago, but I just really didn't get involved with that part of it. I totally handed that off. If I can outsource something, I will. And that's totally fine with me.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. Now, if the offers had been equal, and obviously the time frame isn't that different, right? It's a 2-week difference, which maybe it's a positive or negative, right? Like, if you had developed an injury over the summer, you would have wanted the 2-week buffer as opposed to a 2-week buffer the other direction in terms of leading up to the trials. But do you prefer to have a domestic race, or do you kind of like the idea of traveling internationally for some of these races? I know you probably have done that on the track side.
Yeah, I miss going to Europe. I would love to head to Berlin, or have headed to Berlin, but it is kind of tough timing. You know, I would have had to miss a bunch of kids stuff and work stuff. So that part of, like, that burden would be a little more heavy, but, and Chicago's easy. You know, it's a 1-hour time difference. It's a short flight. I'm actually going Thursday night. I get in, you know, like, I kind of have it down since I did it last year. It feels familiar. So I'm looking forward to doing the same race again, but it is on my bucket list to do all 6 majors. So someday I'll do Berlin and New York, but this year it just made sense. And I like the, you know, this season of my life is stressful enough. If I could just keep things simple, I'm good with that.
Yeah. Well, you said your daughter's birthday just happened. What, it's like a week or two ago, right? Your oldest?
Yeah. She turned 17 on Saturday. Yeah. Just a few days ago.
And she's kicking butt in her own ranking. This isn't about her running, right? She doesn't need the stress of that, but it seems like things are going well on that side. You think you'd share, like, she's holding, like, a trophy from, like, you know, her season.
She is kicking butt. She's won most of her races. She got food poisoning, unfortunately, and got, like, 6th 5 days later in that race. But other than that, she's been on a winning streak. So it's been super fun. She's actually visiting a college this weekend. She and Brent have been traveling together, visiting, doing all that. It's like almost another full-time job having a senior in high school, like, organizing SAT, ACT, these college applications, visits. We almost forgot to take her senior photos. She has those tomorrow. They're due to the yearbook by Friday. So that's, all the things.
Man, you mentioned before, like, hey, the timing and, like, the schedule can be super tricky. And, right, this is a wonderful example of just one person's schedule.
Yeah.
Never mind, like, yours and Brent's and the 3 other kids. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So it is certainly a wild situation. So do you know logistically, like, who's traveling with you to Chicago and things like that? I know for Boston, I think it was 2 of your kids went with you, correct?
Yeah, 3 of them. So everybody's coming to Chicago. Kiki actually has a race that Friday. So I'm going Thursday night, and then Brent's bringing all 4 of the kids by himself on Saturday. And then we all fly back together on Monday.
One hotel room, or how are you working that?
No, 2 hotel rooms.
No way.
Yeah, no way. Yeah. No. I... Yeah, I'll take a hotel room to myself for a few days. Yes, please.
Same hotel? Or are you like, no, we need to
they
distance
are in the
this.
Same hotel. Last year, they didn't get us super close together. It was like up one floor and down the hall. So that's fine. I mean, whatever it needs to be. But yeah, definitely sleeping by myself.
That's great. Well, hey, I'm so excited to talk about this. So never mind like the field. We'll get into the field stuff and the competition side of things. That's for sure. Mawson didn't go the way that you'd wanted. And just looking at like your, I guess, you know, your racing schedule over the years, please correct me if I'm wrong, but this seems to be like the least mountain you've ever raced, maybe going back 2 decades. I mean, this has been pretty late on the schedule for you. So walk me through the spring and summer progression, not only from a training perspective, but, you know, decisions of when and if to race along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't race at all this summer. That wasn't the original plan. And I don't exactly remember the last time we spoke. I guess it was after Boston, but, you know, I did have a coaching change a couple weeks after Boston. And I think that just adjusting to some new training, I kept thinking I'm going to race. Like, I thought about Peachtree, but then I wasn't quite ready. And then I thought about, you know, some other road races in Falmouth and some other end of the summer races. And I just didn't feel prepared yet. I was still adjusting. So I did sneak in a half marathon last weekend in Fort Collins as a little fitness checkpoint, and that went extremely well. I'm pretty stoked about that. So not having to travel for a race was nice too, but I miss racing. Like this summer it's been kind of hard to watch everybody else chasing each other around the roads. And I even missed the track. Like I thought about maybe trying to hop in a 5K or 10K, but Those summer workouts, I mean, to go back to like those first couple workouts with these new coaches, and it's not drastically different, but it was different enough that I definitely needed an adjustment period.
Now, I think we spoke before the coaching change, or if it had happened, it was so new that you didn't want to mention it at the time.
Sure. Okay. So,
I mean, I can't, who knows exactly when and where that was, but could you, like, who is your new coach, and what was part of the decision-making process to make that change?
Yeah, so Brent's been coaching me since 2016, 2017, and it's been great. But as you know, it's not like our whole lives, and it's not his job to be a coach. So it's been hard. And I think just to take that off his plate has been really healthy for our marriage, completely honestly. Like it's a little bit stressful. Like when things were good, they were really good. But when I wasn't running well, it's just an added kind of awkward stress that we just felt wasn't healthy for him or us anymore. So that decision was actually made before Boston, but we were like, let's get through Boston and then make a change. And the natural choice for me was Amy and Alistair Cragg. So they're coincidentally Puma coaches, but they've been friends of ours forever. And, you know, Amy's sort of always been my go-to person for the marathon when we first decided to switch over to that event. So called her and she immediately got excited and we just dove right in. And, you know, it's remote coaching, so that comes with its own challenges. But in general, it's been really, really good.
Now, last time we spoke, you talked about how oftentimes, if almost all of your runs are by yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Brent would be there. You know, he'd be there assisting if he's on the bike or something like that, but not running with other people, right? Which is kind of a different thing. It does seem like you have spent at least a little bit of time, according to your social media, with the track club over in Boulder, which seems like such a fun group of people, to be honest. So has there been a change up in that scenario as well?
I had company, let's see, I've been on a kind of a weird schedule the last few weeks with Kiki Racing on Saturdays. But I got to meet up with them probably the first 10 weeks of this marathon build. And it has been so nice. They have, you know, a plethora of people that I could choose from who could, you know, Evan's been really good about like maybe altering one or two of their workouts to match mine a little bit more, or at least just being on the track at the same time. And yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, there was a workout where I had to lead 400 meters of 10 by a K, you know, and that was it. So it's been super helpful. I cannot thank them enough. And yeah, they're just a great group of people. So I've gotten to meet up with them once or twice a week, minus the last couple of weeks. It's been really good.
And that's Evan Schwartz, right? Is that the person who's leading it?
Yep. And it's been a lot of the same guys that I started training with when I first started training for the marathon. So it's been kind of fun to jump back in and get on the same schedule with them again.
Oh, that's great. And I think one of my colleagues over at Relay, Laura Thweet, I think is now running with the same group, right?
Yeah, so she officially joined them, a few weeks ago. It was really cool. We went on a run together. I don't know if she told you this story, but we were kind of talking through things, and I had made this coaching change, and she had kind of voiced that she was thinking about it. And then a few weeks later, we run again, and you know, I was like, "You should talk to Evan," and she was like, "Yeah, no, I already did. I'm officially joining them." I was like, "Oh, great. Okay, cool. I think that's great."
All right. So, how has this block differed from the previous block or the one or the Chicago block before that? Obviously, taking out the fact that if you're injured or things like that, but just in terms of like how Amy has approached your training and how that may have differed or been similar to what you and Brent have been working on.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of similarities. I mean, I think the bulk of it has been the same. Like, we do pretty structured long runs, and we do pretty big volume. The biggest difference has been my workout. My big workout once a week has been really like 10K half marathon based. So doing a lot of work at under marathon pace, maybe less volume than what I was doing with Brent, but quicker paces. And that was by far my biggest weakness. I know that Alistair and Amy talked to Brent when they first took over, and they said, "What is she bad at?" And Brent was like, "Well, this stuff." And so that's what we've been hitting hard every week. So in the beginning, it was tough. Like, even I think probably 2 or 3 weeks in, I remember I had to bail on a workout, which, you know, happens occasionally, but not often. And I had to call them from the track in the middle of the workout and be like, "Guys, I'm just physically not capable of completing this assignment today. We got to switch it up." So a little bumpy in the beginning. But I think I would say once we officially started the marathon buildup, I've more or less had a solid workout every week.
And how did you work through the communication differences between like living with your coach, who's also like your best friend and husband, versus like having a remote coach who you also don't have a history with from a coach athlete perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the rapport has always been there between the Crags and myself, so it's easy for me to text or call them. That part has been fine. I think, and this is no fault of theirs, but just having a remote coach actually almost kept things really more consistent for me, because even when Brent was coaching me, I was doing a lot of the decision making of what time we're going, where we're meeting, the venue, bottles, you know, routing the course that we're going to do, things like that, like the logistical stuff. So I'm still in charge of all of that stuff. But the communication has been great. And I'm not very needy, to be honest. I don't really talk to them that much. I don't talk to them, maybe twice a week. So that part's been fine. I mean, when Brent was coaching me, we didn't talk about running all that much either. So it's fine.
Also, you were able to segment it with Brent. Like, it wasn't like a lot of informal communication, just like constantly talking about the running side of things.
Totally. And I think that, you know, there was some informal communication off and on, and that's still there. Like, I'll tell him about my workouts, and I think that they communicate a little bit too. But for the most part, like, that part doesn't seem to have changed all that much. It's just the actual nitty gritty details of the workouts themselves that have been really hard. Yeah.
Gotcha. And what about the Fort Collins half marathon? Made you enter that race? And when you did, when you stepped to the starting line, was it to, you know, actually race the half marathon, or was there kind of like a plan in place in terms of how to approach it as more of like a workout setting?
Yeah, so I did it last year before Chicago too. I learned kind of the hard way that traveling during a marathon block, I know we've talked about this, I haven't had good results in the past. So we decided to keep it local again, and it falls 3 weeks before, which I think is perfect timing. We kind of had to pivot on the race plan because I ended up getting really sick that whole week. So I think I had like 4 unplanned, like rest-ish days. I ran every day, but not that much. And I just didn't feel that well. So we kind of reined it in a little bit. But I still ended up running under 71 minutes, and you know, it's at altitude, it starts at like 6,000 feet. So to feel decent at that pace, not feeling 100% health-wise, I think is a really good indication of where I'm at. I was like over 70 seconds, about 70 seconds faster than I ran it last year. It's a good confidence boost. And I took the rest, you know, I definitely didn't hit the mileage I wanted to, but a little extra rest going into the start line of Chicago is never a bad thing.
Oh, I bet. And how has your nutrition changed over this marathon cycle? Do you feel like it was dialed in before this cycle, or do you feel like it's constantly evolving as you get more and more experience with the marathon?
My like race day nutrition, that stuff has stayed the same, you know, as far as the products I'm taking. You know, general nutrition is, I actually even just said this morning to my babysitter that we could really work on things. I think as a whole, my family is, we eat way too much sugar. We really like, we're a typical American family in a lot of ways, even though we have some elite athletes among us. So room for improvement. Sometimes it's just balancing ease of getting calories versus, you know, worrying about the micronutrition. So yeah, I'm working on it. I could probably use a little extra help there, but yeah, trying my best.
And I was thinking more the running nutrition. I know, as a parent, it's like, you know, we're finishing our, it's like we're clearing the place, but having a couple of chicken tenders on the way out. Yeah,
totally. I mean, Domino's pizza is definitely a staple in this household, and Chick-fil-A. Oh, you know, God. What can we do?
Can I ask you this question? Sure. Again, this is far afield of the topic of conversation today. But what is it with kids and Domino's pizza? My kids are the same way. Can't they just enjoy good pizza? Why does it have to be, again, maybe I'm burning a potential sponsor in the future here, but what about Domino's pizza? Because it's so appetizing to kids, and parents usually are like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm having this again.
No, I think it hits the spot for me most days too. I think it's
really?
Like, I love the crust. Like there's some local places here in Boulder that people get crazy about, and I'm like, I don't get it. It's overpriced and it's not filling enough. I think Domino's is like extra doughy and cheesy, and I don't know, it just hits the spot. So it's a weekend. It's usually like a post long run. I'm too tired to cook. Somebody shouts out Domino's and it's here 20 minutes later.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Yeah, maybe it's just part of like being in New England, where there's literally,
I'm sure, yeah,
there are pizza places everywhere, and they're all like that same sort of genre. It's not like, oh, we got the thin crust with the specialty. No. It's all like normal pizza. It's all good. And I'm like driving past them on the way to Domino's. I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this again.
I'm sorry. I mean, I had a similar discussion with a client from the East Coast about bagels. Like, we're in a little bit of a bagel, you know, there's not bagel vacuum here in Boulder. There's a couple of decent bagel stores, but not like on the East Coast. Decent Bagel is actually the best one. That's what it's called.
I love it. It's called Decent Bagels?
Yeah, but it's much more than decent. It's so good. But it's up in Netherlands, so you have to drive 30 minutes or like strategically plan your run there, grab some bagels on the way home.
I love it. That reminds me of Parks and Rec, where Ron Swanson starts his own construction company. He calls it Very Good Construction.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I don't want to be flashy. I'm
just like, don't get too, don't, yeah, just decent bagel. So good. Shout out.
I love it. So in terms of race day nutrition, I'm sure we covered this before Boston, but it's always nice to go over it again. Do you have certain thresholds that you want to hit, like for calories per hour and or carbohydrates per hour? Obviously, this can be a mixture of like gels versus liquid calories and things like that.
Yeah, so I do kind of outsource that too. So the first couple of years I was training for the marathon, I was jumping in a lot with Boulder Underground, which is another group here. And Matt Hensley is the coach there, and he sends me an outline based on like, he does the research, but it's pretty general. I can't remember what it is, but it's like 100 grams of carbs every hour. So he does the math and figures out how many ounces of my drink I need in each one. And then I take a gel probably with every other bottle, and like one with caffeine at like 30K. And that seems to work for me. I do kind of like mix up the gel. So I always take goo, but like I mix up the flavors, just, you know, keep myself on my toes, nice little surprise with whatever bottle I pick up. So but like the fluids that I take is I take Scratch, I think they call it super high carb drink mix, and I don't know what the calories per ounce is, but it works.
It's a lot. Obviously, with those, it's like depends on how many like scoops you do, right? If you do like one scoop versus two scoops versus three scoops, right? There's a lot of products like this with Tailwind, and I think Goo Roctane has a similar product. But yeah, like if you throw like three of the scoops in there, it's like super, super duper caloric versus like you know, one scoop mix.
Yeah, it's really starchy, and it can get a little thick too. So I do like the max scoops per 20 ounces, and then I you know, divvy it up into my bottles, like 8 ounces each bottle.
Gotcha. I've been such a big fan of the liquid nutrition recently. I've been doing like a ton of Tailwind, and it is great. It does get tricky when it's hot, because it's like all of a sudden you're like, you have something like, all right, how concentrated do I want to make this versus like, I need to just take in all this water just because I'm sweating like a madman versus like, all right, if it's cooler, like today, let's say it was like 55 degrees outside. It was like, all right, yeah. I don't have to worry as much. I'm not sweating like crazy. I can like make these a little bit more dense than before. But, you know, so for Chicago, speaking about weather, how was the weather last year? And what are you planning for this year, this go around?
I haven't looked at the weather yet. I'll probably think about that when I'm packing next week. But I assume, so last year was pretty perfect. Like I remember being a little chilly on the start line, and I think I had arm warmers on and long socks. Like I feel like I had a lot of clothes on compared to some people. And then I think I threw off my gloves before we even got to the first bottle stop. So I think it was pretty perfect last year. I hope it's like that again. I remember it being a little bit windy like the last 10K, but other than that, I think it was pretty spot on. I know Chicago can be hot. I mean, we've been training all summer in hot weather, so I'd be fine with that too. So whatever it is, yeah.
So Chicago is known, it was one of the things it's known for, especially people who love watching the race on television, is kind of like the mixed start, right? So you see like the elite females running with oftentimes the so elite males, and you also have some official versus non-official pacers in there. Like I always think of like Ben Bruce as like the non-official pacer du jour a couple of years ago. Or maybe he was official, but I always viewed him in my mind as a non-official pacer at that time. So how are you thinking about, especially the early miles in terms of, you know, pacing, you know, who you might be running with, and in terms of like any official or non-official pacers that could be in the mix as well?
I don't know. I gotta make a plan. I remember last year having a general plan of like wanting to PR, so running, being a little bit conservative in the beginning and running in the 530s. And Ben Bruce was actually an official pacer last year, and I ended up going with him and Maggie Montoya. And it was just us group of three because there was another pacer going a little bit, I thought, a little bit too hot for what I wanted. So I ran with Ben for like 6 miles, and I caught that other group. I hope there will be pacers. I just don't know what it is, and nobody's asked me what I want. So I just, you know, I'll show up and I'll figure it out. And I did run several miles last year by myself, and so I'm okay with that too. Whatever it ends up being, I'm not bringing my own pacer. I'm not overly stressed about it. I think going into the trials, I just want to practice running, you know, as generic as it sounds, running my own race and being prepared to just like take charge of my own pacing. I hope that there's a big group that wants to run a PR for me pace, but we'll see.
I noticed you didn't put a time on that. You almost went there. You're like, who wants to run? Yeah. Pause. A PR for me. Like, is there a certain time? Like, I guess there's a certain time range that you're identifying. And also, alongside that, how are you approaching this race? Obviously, we have the trials coming up in February. So is this more like a, hey, let's just see what I got. It doesn't matter. Like, if I'm dying the last couple of miles because I shot my shot early in the race, that's not a big deal because this isn't the goal race anyway. Or is it more of like trying to dial in a certain pace so you have confidence at that pace for, you know, a race later in the year?
Yeah, I think more of the latter. I want to be able to finish this race rolling some confidence into the trials. I certainly am not going to be going for, I'm sure there's a group going for an American record. I'm not going to be going out with that group, or like a sub 220 group. I don't think that's quite in the cards for me, but I do know that I'm much fitter than last year. And I do think I underperformed last year, you know, with some GI issues and things like that. So I think whatever the pace is, I probably have a range that makes sense. I just want to finish better than I did last year. You know, I think I felt really good in the middle. I found a really nice rhythm, and then, yeah, I didn't completely blow up, but I definitely slowed down. So I don't want to do that this year. So whatever that looks like, I don't know. Pretty open-ended about it, but focusing on like the process and just doing it, executing better than I did last year.
And 7th overall, top 10 in a world marathon major. It was a fantastic performance. Obviously, so few races are going to be perfect, but the fact that you were able to do that obviously bodes well for the future and puts you in a good spot. With that said, this field is stacked. This is going to be so much fun. I can't wait for that. But with that said, we just had a World Marathon Major. So last weekend, we had Berlin. You know, it's hard. Like, I'm on the East Coast. I wake up. It's like, hey, the race has already happened. So I'm like, you know, I wake up at like 6:30. I'm like, going onto YouTube to try to watch it. Obviously, I'm 2 hours ahead of you, so all this happens in the middle of the night. I guess, when were you following it, like, during the middle of the night? Tell me about your viewing experience slash when you became aware that all of a sudden there was a new women's marathon world record.
I was going to bed and I was like trying to do the math. I'm like, I would have to stay up, you know, another 4 hours basically to watch the conclusion of this marathon. And I have my own marathon coming up in a few weeks. I should probably go to bed. So I made the conscious decision to turn off and unplug and actually get some sleep. And then when I woke up, I kind of had forgotten about it because I had my own long run to prep for. So I was like in the kitchen getting my stuff ready. And then I was like, oh, wait, half those people that I've been training with race too. I wanted to see how they did.
Honestly, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So the women's world record wasn't really on my radar. I knew that they would run fast. I just thought, you know, 215, 214, maybe a threat to the world record. I was totally shocked. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty incredible. She surprised me last year there too. And so I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but it was pretty impressive.
It's right. So last year she ran low 215s, which is phenomenal. One of the best races of all time. And on the relay Berlin preview episode, I joked on the podcast. I was like, all right. I was like throwing out like funny little like what if scenarios. And I was like, all right, who's going to run better? Assefa or Jared Ward? I threw that out there. And I was like, oh, Jared Ward. Of course, Jared Ward. Yeah. So I was like, you're watching the final 10K. They're right next to each other. I'm like, I was dying. Like in the group chat, like, hey, I didn't get many predictions right, but this one was a pretty good one. So did you go back and watch it all? Or once you saw that the world record had been broken, not only broken, but absolutely smashed. What did you do after that in terms of, you know, looking to see what happened and all of that?
Yeah, I did go back and watch, like, the coverage wasn't great for the women's race, honestly. So I found myself, you know, fast-forwarding and then, like, watching the parts that were covering her. So it didn't take that long to get through watching it. I did go back and watch. And I did also go back and look up her marathon history. Because if I had remembered right, I was like, I'm pretty sure she debuted in, like, Dubai in, like, 2:34 or 2:32. Like, something that was, like, good for a first marathon from an 800-meter runner. And then to go from that to Berlin last year was super impressive. So I did. I went back and like had to double check that. I was like, this is the same woman, right? This is her. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it was wild at the end. Cause like you can tell the commentators were, and understandably so, kind of approaching it the same way that people approached Bridget when she ran 2:14 at Chicago. Like, she's going out super hot. This is great. But she is inevitably going to slow down.
Yeah.
Right. It was kind of the vibe. And then I think when she was rolling through like the final, like, you know, 8K, they're like, I don't know. Maybe she won't be slowing down.
Right. I can't remember at what point in the broadcast they were like, well, she's getting the world record. Just how much under is she going to be? Like, yeah, they conceded to that. I think probably earlier than they were expecting, but for sure. That was exciting.
Right. Yeah, the final 5K was just a fait accompli from a world record perspective. It was like, all right, now we're just going to continually like move the goalposts. Like, how much are we going to change? Tell me about that long run. What was it like having your long run after watching Assefa go 2:11 high?
That's a good question. I definitely had to battle with myself a little bit. I was like, Sarah, you could use this as motivation. You don't have to be defeated by this. This isn't discouraging. It's encouraging. So it was definitely a little bit of a mental battle the first few miles. And then I just tried to get it out of my head. And I'm like, I'm not Assefa. It's okay. I can run my own race and be really proud of myself for whatever it's going to be, even if it's not even in the same stratosphere of performance. Human performance is just you. It's okay to be in awe and be inspired and also know that what you're capable of is going to be different, but also really cool.
And it's not as if, I mean, obviously this was a supernova performance. And obviously with that, anytime a world record gets shattered like that, there's going to be obvious questions because this is sport, right? So there's going to be people who are wondering, is this legit? Is this real? Sometimes that sort of thing gets sorted out even years later. So we're not going to sit here and prognosticate about things. There's no way for us to know. With that said, breaking records is not new this year, right? I mean, Faith Kipyegon has gone on a world record breaking string over the summer. Again, you weren't in these races. You were watching from afar, but this used to be your bread and butter or a lot of these races. What was it like watching that, knowing that, like, hey, this isn't actually one of my competitors, this is just fun? What was it like seeing the Summer of Faith?
I love Faith. I think that was great. It was so exciting. I remember it was a little bit delusional, but probably back in like 2017, I was like, maybe I could get like some weird Guinness World Record for being the fastest mom over a mile or 1500. And then Faith had a baby that same year. And then I think she ran 3:59. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to work a little harder. And then not only, you know, then she progressed much, much faster than that. So yeah, no, but I tip my hat at her. She's pretty incredible, and I have gotten to meet her a few times, and I think she's good for our sport, and I like to watch it. I like to see it.
Now, you've been in a lot of races. Have you ever seen the sort of mutual love society that we've seen at some of these faith races where
jealous.
Obviously she's excited, and maybe like she has like a teammate or a countrywoman that knows her well and that she would be excited too. Instead, it's the whole field is excited. I've never seen this before. Have you?
No, not really. The only thing I got close to experiencing that was, I think, like, we, you know, at maybe like a U.S. indoor championship, we were protesting some sort of DQ, and we kind of like all held hands off the finish line. But it wasn't like celebratory necessarily. And to watch the love for Faith, I think, says a lot about her as a person. Super exciting. Like, I'm definitely jealous. Those races look so fun to be a part of. And you know, I mean, I've always said, like, some of my best friends are my fiercest competitors, and it's just really cool to watch that play out, and I'm just so happy for her. Yeah.
All right. There's one more person I want to ask you about, because she's also incredible. If it wasn't for Faith, this person would have been the talk of the summer, at least from an endurance running perspective, was Safwan Hassan. I mean, like, as amazing as Faith was, in other ways, and in very different ways, Safwan was doing other amazing, otherworldly things. You know, at the World Championships, people know, we've already covered this time and time again at so many places. But even the fact that even at the World Championships, not only was she racing a ton, she was also doing workouts, Chicago Marathon prep workouts between the races. She just seems like the most energetic person in the history of the world. Again, but she's going to be running Chicago, so this is someone who you're going to be running with. What's it been like watching her progression, and I guess just your general thoughts about Safwan as someone, again, who you're going to be running against, but you've been able to watch from afar as well?
Safwan is so entertaining. Watching her in London, I was like laughing. You know, she stops and she stretches, and I'm like, this poor girl, like, amazing. She doesn't know. Like, I kind of felt bad for her for a minute. Like, she doesn't know what she got herself into running a marathon. And she, you know, she almost had that like run in with the motorbike because she forgot a bottle. It was like chaos, but it was like riveting. I just, I really enjoy watching her because you never know what you're going to get. But I think, again, she's super impressive too. I don't know, for me, because I'm technically, you know, her competitor, I try not to. I try not to think about it too deeply, but she is entertaining for sure.
And she just seems like just a very unique person. Very, very unique is a little bit. Someone can be very unique. They're either unique or they're not, but she seems like an incredibly unique person, not only in terms of like her character, but also just like her athletic journey, right? She doesn't seem like the kind of person who like would need a nap after a long run, right? She'd be like, nope, I'm going to go mow the lawn after the long run or do something else, right? Like, it doesn't seem like she needs downtime.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like she and I could get along pretty well. I think that she would she and I could hang for sure. Yeah.
I love it. You need to rope her into the American, you know, endurance running / real estate subgroup.
Oh, totally.
You, Kara, it could be a little triumvirate.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
All right. All right, Sarah, is there anything else that we haven't touched on before Chicago?
No, I think we got it all. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, best of luck to you. I hope you have a great trip. This is going to be a lot of fun for all of us watching from afar, and good luck.
Thank you.